Canada starts off pretty normal on the West Coast. British Columbia, you know, it's like beautiful natural resources. They shoot TV shows and movies there. That's like your California, right? And then there's Alberta, where it's like oil and cowboys. That's like your Texas. And then there's Saskatchewan, which we've established are all perverts. Looks like I'm not performing in Saskatchewan again. And then there's Manitoba. Which Manitoba is like that friend you invite last to the party. And only because you forgot they existed.
Broadcasting like we don't exist, this is The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only Caps produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have everybody with us tonight. Jason, how are ya?
I haven't been turned from a solid to a liquid yet.
Surprisingly, yeah. Yeah, no, it's a little warm.
But I did survive a very busy bachelor party weekend. Lots
hey.
Of golf. A lot of water hazards. Have you ever had a water hazard before?
Like been hit into a water like a golf
no like the drink a water hazard
no I don't
it
I don't
is
indulge.
It is like the perfect golfing drink, and we had to, I think we've permanently changed the menu at the War Road Estates golf course, because apparently they know nothing about water hazards in the States.
Oh.
But it's basically vodka and Powerade.
Okay.
So
we're introducing new drinks to the Americans.
All of the hydration you lose from sweating on the golf course and the alcohol you gain right back from the Powerade.
All right.
So it's just like neutral. It saved a few lives this weekend.
Yeah, that sounds fun. That sounds all right. At least you guys had a good time, though. That's important. Glad everybody with us here on the Hockey Show. We got lots to go over today. Song you were hearing, we'll zip back into that in a second, but song we're hearing is from a second single off the 2014 album by the English band The Struts, entitled, the album's entitled Everybody Wants. The song called Kiss This was written by lead singer Luke Spiller. I'll bring it back in so you can hear a little bit of it. And the song was written after discovering his girlfriend had been cheating on him.
Oof.
But he hated the idea of writing a song about it that contained nothing but self-pity. So instead, he decided to write the rock anthem you're hearing about standing up for oneself and saying bleep you to all of those who did him wrong.
Nice.
So I thought, you know, this might be a good song because I am sick and tired. I want to see this heat relieved and gone, like, now. Because we've had, 2 weeks of this baking in this heat?
Yeah. I was thinking about it. Like, I do not remember it ever. I mean, climate change is a thing, but I do not remember it ever being this hot growing up. Maybe I just blew past it because I was...
But for me, it's not the heat. I remember it being hot during some summers. It's the humidity that I don't remember.
Oh.
Like, I'm like, did we switch, like, environments with Vancouver?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was when we were down in Minnesota, it was, we had 90% humidity the entire time we were there.
Like, what's going
on with
that?
So it's like, we would walk out of the cabin we were renting, and it's just a wall of heat and humidity. And it's like, I feel constantly damp.
Yes.
and hot.
Yes.
And I feel like my sweat is doing nothing.
If you're listening on like headphones or something right now, you can probably hear the whirring in the background. Both Jason and I have fans on each other because we're legitimately like dying in the booth today. Yeah. So
we do have, I believe we do now have control over the AC again, but it's not helping.
No, it has not kicked in as well as it could, but let's get into the hockey stuff where maybe it's a little cooler and certainly some of the stories are a little cooler for sure.
I could totally go for being in a hockey rink right now.
You know what? You wouldn't hear me complain if that's the case, but I'll let you decide. Where do you want to start tonight? Do you want to start with the big story out of Toronto, I guess?
Sure.
Okay. So for those that might be a fan of Sportsnet, again, I watch a little Sportsnet every now and then. One of the things I used to watch daily was the Jeff Merrick Show. Mm-hmm. Not that I used to, you know, take time out of my day just to make it. But if it was on, I'd sit there and listen to Jeff talk.
It's on like was on at the perfect time of day to just like have on in the background.
So, again, Jeff Merrick has not been on TV and has not been on Sportsnet's media sources of any kind since basically June 28th. Mm-hmm. After being on air at the NHL entry draft on day one, Merrick was notably absent from the draft on day two. He's usually there talking people up, talking everything. Was not there at all. 32 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Friedman that was supposed to come out after the draft, gone as well.
Yeah.
It was not recorded. Nobody made mention of it. Everybody was kind of like, hey, wasn't there supposed to be? Mm-hmm. Nobody made comments, whatever. And again, the Jeff Merrick Show on Sportsnet has disappeared from the broadcast schedule from the behemoth media company. So a lot of people were asking what happened.
Yeah.
And a couple of people, Jonas Siegel, I think, was the first one. Jonas Siegel?
I think he was.
Was the first to report on the fact that something draft-related may have happened at the draft. Mm-hmm. Like at the
something related to the draft.
Right. That maybe went on in terms of what happened. So let's get into this because this angers me a lot. Because I think that I don't believe the punishment fits the crime.
No.
And I really think that Sportsnet maybe did Jeff Merrick wrong.
Well, you're seeing somebody get punished for something that they're not involved with. They're just getting they're getting punished for something on the periphery of what they did.
Right. Yeah. So here's what happened. We'll get into this right now because reporting broke basically around noon today. That Katie Strang and Dan Robson in The Athletic were digging into it. Apparently, Jeff Merrick was providing advance notice of draft picks to a friend. Now, that again, nothing wrong with that. Guys make, guys have bets and whatever. No, not bets, I guess, but guys have, conversations about who
they're sharing information.
Them. Right.
People are sending things back and forth all the time.
Where things kind of went off the rails, though, is as Sportsnet's draft pick interviewer, he got the heads up from the NHL that they give to TV partners when selections are made.
Yeah, that's why, when you're watching the draft, it says the pick is in.
Right.
At that point, the teams are telling the NHL, and the NHL is telling all of the media partners, hey, this person's being picked, get ready.
But before they were officially announced, so again, Merrick's got the information 1 to 2 minutes ahead of everybody else, right? So before it's officially announced, he knows who's coming up, because again, Merrick's got to be ready for the interview. He's got to know who's coming up so he can get the questions ready and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Merrick allegedly passed on some of those the heads up sort of notifications to a friend in former NHL scout and Barry Colts director of player personnel, Mark Seidel, who then tweeted about the picks. The problem, though, was that Seidel was tweeting about the picks before they were made.
Yep.
So if you were following Seidel, or I believe he was tweeting for one of the scouting services, if you were following Seidel's information, he was tweeting out prior to teams actually picking the player that they were choosing, and the scouting services aren't part of that NHL circle of, hey, you need to know this information.
No, they provide all the scouting reports, and they do their like central rankings and things like that, but they're not part of that kind of media sphere.
So along with that account of what went on, Strang and Robson's reportings showed that, quote, league and media sources said that Merrick gave Seidel a heads up on the pick so that Seidel could better prepare and offer analysis of those selections on social media. Professional sports leagues are known to monitor social media during live events such as drafts. It is also common for leagues to partner with external integrity and compliance firms to monitor social media activity, unquote. Mm-hmm. Which makes total sense. They want to make sure that this is going down as it should, where people don't know who's coming, who's going to be drafted next, where they're... And again, there's a reason for that. We're going to get to the reason in a second. So I don't have a problem so far as to what's gone on. It's a timing issue. And that's basically what it is. Is that
exactly.
Seidel wasn't doing anything wrong except trying to give... He was trying to offer the analysis that people were looking for on each of the picks.
Yeah.
Based upon what Jeff Merrick was telling him, he just did it sooner than he should have.
Yeah, he probably had all the information ready. He just needed to know what the process was going to be and get the... So he was ready to, like, hit send tweet.
I mean, it's basically copy-paste send.
Yeah, exactly. Or he had them, like, all drafted. He just had to pick the right draft and send it out.
Whatever, yeah.
If he had been a little bit slower, if he had sent the tweets directly when the pick was being made, we never would have heard about this.
Probably not, no. So this is where everything sort of comes to a head now.
And I do want to say, stuff like this probably happens all the time.
Oh, for sure.
And people are passing this information around.
But we see it at the NFL all the time with the pick is in. And again, every single, I mean, NFL's got, you know, 100 different partners.
Yeah.
Every single network has 100 analyses of these various players that are going out there. They just can't release them until the player is picked.
But we had the, before the Seattle expansion draft, we knew what the team was the night before because somebody at Central Registry leaked that information.
So, again, this is where things come to a head now, because the NHL can't do anything to the scouting sort of agencies because
they need them.
They kind of need them for what's going on. And, again, going after the scouting agency would probably be a moot point anyway, because the NHL doesn't really have a lot of reach there. However, the NHL had to share those concerns, the concerns about when those tweets were going out, about the situation, because of where they were. Again, if you remember, the draft took place at the Sphere in Las Vegas. So they had to tell the Nevada Gaming Control Board, which probed further, according to multiple sources briefed on that investigation. Because there were bets being made on who was going to be drafted at what position and who was going to be drafted next and all that, the Nevada Gaming Control Board had to be notified.
Yes.
They did a further investigation. Again, they haven't released any information on what they found yet, but it sounds like they were looking into it or still are looking into it. But as we saw with Shane Pinto's punishment, the NHL sounds like they'll do whatever it takes to keep those gambling dollars lining its pockets so that basically they're not going to be out any money with any sports books.
Exactly.
And I understand the revenue source. Mm-hmm. It looks like the NHL took those concerns after the Nevada Gaming Control Board opened an investigation to Sportsnet and said, hey, we got to solve this problem.
Jeff Merrick got fired for sharing information with a scouting agency and got fired because the sports books got mad.
So again, the scouting agency which had all the information already about all of the players just needed the heads up on who was going to get picked in order to publish it correctly in the right order.
Yes.
And Merrick provided that to the scouting agency, and the sports book went, hold on a sec, or I shouldn't say the sports book. The Nevada Gaming Control Board kind of went, hold on, we're going to have a problem here because a lot of these sports books are placing
still open.
Bets. Yeah. So in Vegas, it wasn't open. It had closed 24 hours beforehand because of the event being on that night.
Yeah, most state agencies do that.
Right.
Like they'll close at a certain point before, and the provinces here in Canada do this as well. At a certain point before the event starts, a bunch of bets are closed.
Right.
And you can't bet on certain things. That would probably be one of them.
Because
they probably don't have live betting in that way in Vegas.
Except in other jurisdictions, they don't.
Yes.
And that's where the problem is going to arise from now.
Yep.
So the NHL kind of looked at this and went to the Sportsnet and said, hey, listen, we've got a problem. We're unhappy that Merrick is doing this. Can you solve this problem? And it sounds like Sportsnet told the league, we'll take care of it so it doesn't happen again. And Merrick's contract was terminated with Sportsnet.
Merrick got fired for doing something that reporters do and league sources, people in the NHL do all the time.
But do you find, and again, I'm not saying that this is the right answer by any means, but do you find that the NHL is becoming the Gestapo when it comes to any sort of leaked information?
Anything that could impact gambling, which is everything.
Right.
Like at a certain point, people are going to get punished for sharing information on injuries because injuries are important.
But they already do, though. We already know that that's one of the things they can't talk about.
But do you remember, I can't remember which referee it was, but he got caught on a hot mic saying, basically, I was looking for a makeup call.
Yes.
And then he was taken out of the rotation for the playoffs and essentially was like, he was going to retire at the end of the year, but they were like, yeah, we're not scheduling you for any more games. See you later.
But this is what I mean is that I'm, and again, I know that players can't talk about injuries. They can't, you know, and again, this is why we have such ridiculous language when it comes to upper body injury, lower body injury, you know, lower body soreness, you know, that kind of stuff or whatever, right? I understand where we're going with the betting stuff, but at some point we need to stop where we are and go, is this really good for the game?
Exactly. Is this like...
And full disclosure, you work for a lotteries corporation.
Yes, and we do sports betting.
Right. I am not trying to rip on the sports betting people. Again, lots of people out there are good at it, and lots of people out there make money on it.
But there's a lot more
people don't.
There's a limit.
Right.
There's a point where the interests of one party overrule the interests of another. We're fast approaching a point where the interests of the sports books are overriding the interests of players, of the media, of fans, of everybody. The NHL is way more focused on the dollars from people like Bet365 and Sports Interaction and all of the major online sports books. Mm-hmm. And they are, them, Rogers and Bell, are way more worried about appeasing them than what's good for the game and what's good for the league.
But if you're going to take care of your sponsors that much, and again, I'm not saying that they're not important. I'm not saying the sports books aren't going to help drive revenue for the NHL.
They will. They're obscenely wealthy.
It's low risk, high reward for the NHL in terms of being partnered with them. But if you're Sportsnet now and you have to fire a 16-year veteran who is highly respected in the industry,
yes,
because he gave insider information basically to a social media person. Mm-hmm. Who released it a couple of seconds or maybe a minute before a player was picked. Again, who's at fault here? Okay, you can say Merrick is at fault. I'm not going to deny that. He shouldn't be giving that information away. But at the end of the day, these two guys are colleagues and friends. They're industry buddies in terms of working together.
But they did nothing wrong.
But my question doesn't go to whether or not they're doing right or wrong. My question is, what is Sportsnet doing in trying to appease the NHL if they have no interest in ever going back and partnering with them again?
Exactly. Because we know once this... They're trying to get out of the deal that they have with the NHL before it's over.
Like, are they worried that the NHL is going to go no games on Sportsnet next year? Hooray! We don't have to worry about it.
Oh, cool. Yeah. We get out of this really bad deal that we're in.
Right.
That did not pay off. Like... It's ridiculous. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's this idea that you have to appease the league at every... Like, what blackmail does the NHL have over the executives at Rogers that they're gonna bend over backwards, fire somebody like Jeff Merrick, who is a part of the backbone that is hockey coverage at Sportsnet.
Like, he is a respected individual.
A guy who did not get paid enough for all of the stuff that he did for Sportsnet. You fire him for doing something everybody does, sharing information to a valuable stakeholder of the league.
To a guy that legitimately is working for a scouting, all he's trying to do is get the right information out about these players.
Yes. But because the sports books could get mad,
and
he loses his job.
And we've seen reporters publish stories before they should go live, before they should go, this is how we get quote-unquote scoops on some of these big stories, is that somebody gets a little nugget of information and they run with it. Like, it's not out of the realm to say Jeff Merrick made a mistake. Not going to deny that. But it's not. But it to get fired from his position at Sportsnet over what he was doing. So again, this is legitimately like it's not like copying a paper in university and being being tossed out of the class. This is legitimately like copying one letter.
Yeah, but like the thing that drives me up the wall is the fact that this was something that was not gambling related at all.
No.
This was not gambling related. They were not betting on the picks.
The fact that it was turned into that, though, angers me more about everything that the NHL does
now. But here's the thing is, if they had just let it go, if Merrick had kept his job and everything would have been fine. Nobody would have found out, and now we wouldn't have had this idea that, like, oh, the because the sports books might have gotten mad, Jeff Merrick got fired.
But hold on.
It's different from the Shane Pinto situation, because Pinto was it was a bad look for the league,
right,
because it was directly involved with gambling, and they want to keep it as squeaky clean as possible, and he broke the terms of service of the site he was on.
But here's the thing. If the Nevada Gaming Control Board does an investigation and finds nothing went down, nothing was wrong, why did Merrick lose his job then?
Exactly. Like, if that report comes out and they're like, yeah, whatever, like, it didn't impact anything.
Right, the end result was nobody placed any bets that changed the course of history. Then why did Merrick lose his job over sending a text to a buddy to make sure the right information got out?
Because you know who was able to have bets placed at that time? The people that give Rogers money.
Again, I this is madness all over the place. I'll say this right now. I'm not going to hold this against Jeff Merrick.
No.
I know that Merrick was trying to do the right thing and
got caught up in the
drama now. And again, yes, you can say he did wrong by giving out league information when he shouldn't have. I understand that. But at the end of the day, Jeff Merrick is probably going to be better off not being handcuffed by Sportsnet anymore, yeah, because now he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, he's going to do, whether he stays independent or he goes somewhere else, he's going to do some really great work.
I would hope that Jeff Merrick finds a platform. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know where he's going to end up. But I would hope that Jeff Merrick finds a platform where he can do the same type of show, same type of job, and legitimately crush everybody, including, yeah, and again, I'm not saying that I want to be put out off a radio show, but if Jeff Merrick was on at 5:30 at from 5:30 to 6:30 at the same time, and he was killing us, he's going to kill us in the ratings anyway. But
yeah,
if he was killing us anyway, I'd probably at some point go, you know what? I'd rather watch Jeff Merrick's show.
Yeah, like.
I'm not saying it to be to be negative towards
us. But he's just
he's connected.
Yeah, he's connected. He's in. Like, people really appreciate. They really appreciate the job that he does. So I can totally see him starting up a podcast or getting on with some YouTube channel.
I can see him doing something like what Hustler does, where he's got his own YouTube show every day at a specific time or whatever.
Yeah, that's always good. It's so much fun to have that on at work. Just
like the you hear
particularly
some good
on
stuff.
Game days.
So, Jeff Merrick, we're not here to say that you were completely, completely absolved of anything here, but at the end of the day, you deserve better, man, and you got our support if that matters to anybody. I know that he's never going to hear the show, but he's got our support for sure, so. To stay in Canada a little bit, I think this one needs to be talked about as well, because it seems like you can always count on the Edmonton Oilers to fail.
Yeah.
Whether it be, losing the Stanley Cup final or, bringing in guys that have very disgraced and or questionable
Perry,
pasts.
Kane, Vertanen.
Now they go and hire disgraced GM Stan Bowman to be their new general manager and executive vice president.
Yeah.
Let's state the obvious up front, and I want to make sure everybody's clear on this. And if anybody calls me and anybody wants to tear on me, rip on me for this, I'll have a significant discussion with you, because Stan Bowman did not build the Chicago Blackhawks into a Stanley Cup champion.
He took over the year they won.
If anything, he drove them into the ground to allow them to draft Bedard.
He pulled off the sod for Panarin trade.
He legitimately angers me in a number of ways, especially taking credit for that, but the players who were part of the Chicago core that were drafted long before 2009, when Bowman was named as GM, and Dale Tallon was fired after the RFA thing that came out and replaced by Bowman in that summer in terms of when everything happened. The only player that he didn't put in place in terms of getting that going was Marian Hossa, who he signed in the offseason right before the RFA thing went down.
Yep.
So to say that Stan Bowman had a hand in, maybe he did a little bit as the assistant GM. To say he was the architect, though, of the Chicago Blackhawks dynasty, let's flush that right now.
And
that's a lie.
A couple gimme trades here and there, and getting Artemi Panarin out of Russia, that doesn't count.
But again, if you're just gonna acquire to trade him,
because Panarin was meant to come in and help them win another Stanley Cup, and then they just never won again.
So, I mean, Bowman can, everybody can look at Bowman's record and go, you know, he was part of that dynasty. He was part of it. He was he was not in any way a designer of it. So, the other thing that, that needs to be said, and again, we had said we want to see receipts. Yeah. Long before these guys, again, when they were being welcomed back by the NHL, we said we wanna
a second chance.
Right. We want to see receipts. And again, I'll give Stan Bowman a little bit of credit. He was working with Sheldon Kennedy's Respect Group in terms of learning about, you know, bullying and discrimination and all that kind of stuff. Learning a lot about that in terms of the last couple of years. He's apparently made phone calls to Kyle Beach and tried to mend fences there. I don't know. Again, I don't know if Kyle Beach is okay with that, but whatever. Mm-hmm. But Sheldon Kennedy is on record. And this is where I legitimately have to wonder if Edmonton uses their head or they just maybe have it as a hat rack, because Sheldon Kennedy came out to reporters and said that Bowman's going to have to walk the walk for people to start believing he's a changed man. Exactly. This is only step one of a very long process.
Yes.
Basically, he hasn't even gotten to the point where Sheldon Kennedy is like, you know what? I'm seeing change. Kennedy's not saying that at all. He's saying it's time for him to show that he's learned something.
Yeah. Like, I keep going back to it because the more that I think about it, the more that I'm like, this is now the... it's sad to say this is the standard, but Logan Mailloux and the strides that he's made, the fact that he's, like, kept up the work after he's, like, started to get the chances back and he's, like, continuing to do the volunteerism and the work that he started when he was trying to repair all those bridges.
I think a lot of that comes from Martin Saint-Louis. I think a lot of that comes from Kent Hughes. And I think a lot of that comes from Jeff Gillette, who have all said, if you want to play for this team, you're going to have to do this.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, he didn't just, like, do it up until the team was like, okay, you can be a part of this. He's continued to do that stuff.
Right. So I agree with you on that. But that's where I'm leading to, because my question is, are we going to see a change in the culture of the Edmonton Oilers
where
guys like, again, like you were mentioning, Evander Kane, Corey Perry, and Jake Virtanen no longer get shots with this organization just because they're, they're a serviceable NHL player.
Yeah. Well, Virtanen wasn't even a serviceable NHL player.
But I mean, the hope was that he was going to be. But again, this is a franchise that has built its sort of backbone in the last few years on giving guys second chances.
Yeah.
And you really have to wonder, at what point do you start going, enough's enough? Like, we need to find good character, good quality people before we start giving guys second chances again.
Exactly. You're kind of at a crossroads, right? Like, it's sad because the bar is so low, it is underground.
Right.
The fact, like,
I agree
that Bowman has jumped over, he hasn't jumped over the bar, he hasn't set a new bar, he's just tiptoed over the bar that doesn't really exist because it's so far underground at this point that he's getting like full credit to him to start that journey. You need for it to continue, for it to be worth anything, because if he stops, like, the thing for me is going to be interesting to see, like, if this stops here and he just continues on with his career and does not address any of this, or if the other fork in the road, which is he works more with the Respect Group, the code of conduct that he wrote for the NHL starts being used more, he institutes it with the Edmonton Oilers and things kind of start progressing forward, and the character of the team, the culture of the team starts to change, that's the other fork in the road, right? You've got the path to the left, which is Stan Bowman just goes back to being Stan Bowman and runs the Edmonton Oilers into the ground, and then you've got the other path, which is he continues to make change.
Okay, hold on, but I think there's a third path as well, because Stan Bowman can talk about making change all he wants, and certainly, you know, that's the sort of the path of the left, and can sort of, you know, say, well, this is what I learned, this is what I did, this is what...
Yeah.
But behind closed doors, we know the NHL runs in a completely different world in terms of how they operate. And my question isn't going to be so much, are we going to see, you know, minute, you know, little changes, code of conduct changes, that kind of stuff. Are we actually going to see Stan Bowman come out and go, you know what, Evander Kane, you're a disruption to this team, and we don't need you anymore. We are terminating your contract.
Yeah.
And again, that might be extreme in terms of one of the extreme sort of setups. But
also, I don't think they can afford to terminate his contract at this point.
But I'm just saying, though, like, if there's an opportunity to really put your foot down.
Yeah.
are you going to do that? Because actions will always speak louder than words in the NHL.
Yeah.
If you don't truly believe that, and again, I'm not trying to compare apples to oranges here, but again, look at Paul Maurice. Mm-hmm. I mean, Paul Maurice is loved by his players because of how he treats them.
Yes.
It's not a question of whether or not he's a great coach or whether, I mean, he won a Stanley Cup, so he's probably a pretty good coach.
Yeah.
But, I mean, guys go through walls for him, for Rod Brind'Amour, for these various coaches.
For Lou Lamoriello.
Lou Lamoriello has been around forever and never seems to get anybody saying anything negative about him other than he wouldn't let me wear the number I wanted.
Yeah.
But you look at these guys and you go, their players go through walls for them because of how they're treated, not because of what they bring to the game. And you wonder if Stan Bowman is going to make that change. Because right now, I don't know if that happens. I don't know if Stan Bowman's that guy yet.
Yeah. Like, different situation, but there's a reason that Mike Keenan isn't coaching, and he's still coaching, but he's not coaching in the NHL anymore.
Well, I mean, you can say that about him, Bill Peters. I mean, there's a list of guys that legitimately don't have an option to coach in the NHL anymore because they just don't work.
Yeah.
And it's not a matter of you know, they're probably brilliant coaches. They probably know the systems really well. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to treat players like crap, they're probably going to run you out of the business pretty quickly.
Yeah. And it's like, you got to start thinking about like the prospects that are going into the Oilers organization. Like, what are they starting to think? What are their parents thinking when they're going into this organization where this guy's at the helm? Like, they're gonna, whether he's done the work or not, but his association with that incident is going to make people talk, going to make people concerned.
This is Columbus all over again with Mike Babcock. Like, nobody knows how it's going to work, and everybody's going to assume that, okay, well, there'll probably be some transition and we'll see how things go. The very first thing that Stan Bowman could do is blow up in his face.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what...
People are going to be watching.
He's under a microscope now for probably at least the next year.
Yeah.
So, don't screw up. Show everybody that you've changed, and maybe you'll have a chance at sticking around a little bit longer than what Mike Babcock did.
Exactly. But that's the thing, is like, we've got... And I know people are going to be like, well, he showed receipts. He did the work. He's like,
no.
He did not. He's started the journey, as Sheldon Kennedy has said. We need to see that journey continue.
Again, the receipts are what he does now as a human being.
Yeah.
Getting into the respect group and working with the respect group is where he learns to be a different person.
Saying sorry is not enough.
Right. Now it's about showing that you're a different person.
Exactly.
That's where the receipt is.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for a lot. Just start do the basics.
Yeah.
Meet with guys, talk to them, learn about them, and understand that these guys are human beings.
Yeah.
That would be the basic.
Yeah. And then when that first big challenge comes your way, when you have a guy, as we have seen on multiple occasions with the Oilers.
I'll give you an example. Leon Draisaitl. His contract is coming up for renewal. He's got a young family.
Yep.
Let's figure out how to treat Leon Draisaitl right.
Yeah. But what I'm thinking is, like, the next time an Evander Kane situation rolls by, the next time a Corey Perry situation rolls by, do you look the other way because they're a good hockey player? Or do you say, that person does not fit the ethos of our organization, bye-bye?
Well, the court of public opinion saw Oilers fans react swiftly and negatively in the news, so he's working from the bottom up at this point. So we'll have to see what happens at that point. But Edmonton's got a lot of problems that they're going to have to try and work through if they're going to win back. Again, winning hockey games is always going to be something that any team with Connor McDavid will do.
Yeah.
People will come out and cheer for a winner. But when it comes to Stan Bowman and the moves that he makes and the work that he's doing, people will be quick to judge him.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. A little more local before we jump to the maybe the international side of things here. Want to bring up a quick note that we had the 2024 Sport Manitoba Hall of Fame inductees that were announced this past week, and I think it needs to be mentioned only because there were some really good players, really good hockey players that were basically announced as being joining the sorry, excuse me the setup this year. In the what took you long, so long category, Jennifer Botterill finally gets inducted into into the Hall of Fame.
Very deserved.
No word of a lie, and again, I'm not trying to be rude about this. She should have been in there a long time ago.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
I 100% agree.
Again, I'm just going to run this down quickly for you, because again, people don't seem to understand just how good Jennifer Botterill is. Here we go. Born in Ottawa, but she was raised here, obviously, in terms of what went on. She still holds the record for most points in an NCAA hockey career for both men and women. There is no one that has scored more points than Jennifer Botterill in NCAA hockey. She's a three-time Olympic gold medalist. She won in 2002, 2006, 2010. She won silver at the Games as the youngest member of the first Canadian national women's hockey team in 98.
Mm-hmm.
She was the youngest member on that team, even younger than Haley Wickenheiser. She has five IIHF Women's World Hockey Championships, and she's obviously now working for Sportsnet as an analyst, where she, again, I think she's one of the best analysts
that
they
have. She's fantastic.
But again, how did it come to this point where, like, 10 years after she's retired, she finally gets into the Hall of Fame? Anyway, whatever. Former guest of this show, former guest of the hockey show, Ted Irvin going in this year. Ted Irvin finally getting in there. I didn't know this. Do you know what his nickname was in hockey?
No.
The baby-faced assassin.
That is incredible.
I did not know that.
That is incredible.
He played for the St. Boniface Canadiens and the Winnipeg Braves. He skated for the Boston Bruins in his first season, got traded to the New York Rangers. His career ended up 154 goals, 331 points, 657 penalty minutes in 724 games. He was a big supporter and was instrumental in bringing Special Olympics to Manitoba.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So there you go. I mean, everybody kind of knows him as Chris Jericho's dad as well. So
yeah,
that's kind of cool. And finally, in terms of one, I mean, there's a bunch of other people that are going in this year as well. And I mean, certainly we can mention them, but I think the one last guy that needs to be mentioned for sure, because he certainly, I mean, had an effect on me. I know that you, as a former newspaper writer, you probably read a lot of his stuff. The guy that's going in as a sports writer, Randy Turner, former longtime Winnipeg Free Press writer, sports writer. Randy Turner is going to be posthumously inducted. He passed away in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Randy had all sorts of great articles that he filled out in the Free Press, and certainly he wrote about the Gold Eyes a lot, wrote about the Bombers a lot, but every once in a while he turned his acerbic attitude towards sports, towards hockey, and he'd write something just off the wall there. So nice to see Randy Turner being honored as well, and I'm hoping his family is honored by that. So
yeah,
that'd be really good.
It's unfortunate that he's not here to receive it in person, but still very well deserved.
So Botterill, Irvin, and I mean Randy Turner is just a sports writer, but going in, Botterill still not in the Hockey Hall of Fame, for those that are wondering what the hell is going on.
Well, we know that their track record of putting women in the Hall of Fame is not great.
I could say
a lot of words.
Let's jump across the ocean. KHL is officially independent on its own kind of NHL-like now, we'll say. Mm-hmm. The Russian Hockey Federation split from the KHL officially on Tuesday, July 9th. Frankly, the split won't affect much in the hockey world, except for maybe NHL draft picks. NHL teams will now be able to negotiate directly with KHL teams in order to gain releases for those players.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say substantial fees will be to get them over will be something that the KHL teams will have to decide upon. It's going to be interesting, though, because I think the split allows the KHL to operate a little bit more, like I said, like the NHL.
Yep.
No outside influencers now to affecting decisions on players or financial transactions. So when the Russian Ice Hockey Federation was involved, and again, they had to sort of, parse their players for every single, IIHF competition and everything like that. There was a lot of infighting, it sounded like, in Russia between do we take players playing in the KHL or do we take NHL players to these games, to whatever tournament at that point. And it sounded like the NHL players won a lot of the time because they were they're the most recognizable, they're generally viewed as the best, blah, 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 blah. Now that doesn't have to happen, though, because the Russian Hockey Federation can choose anyone they like.
Yep.
Because the KHL players don't have a IIHF transfer card. So they cannot play in IIHF tournaments without that anymore.
So how would they get one?
So they would have to. So the KHL would have to sign a deal like the NHL does with the IIHF and basically agree to their terms of whatever setup is going to be.
Yeah.
So It's going to be interesting to see that going forward, because the Russian Hockey Federation can still select players from the NHL now.
Yep.
They can ask if players from the KHL can go, but the IIHF can refuse those players if they want.
And that was always the funny thing.
And again, they're still before we go on, they're still suspended.
Yeah.
Like, Russia's still suspended. We're not saying that's going to happen anytime soon. We're just saying in the future.
This doesn't clear the road for those players to go back to, like, the Olympics or the World Championships or whatever.
Yeah.
It just changes how the KHL operates. And it's really, to me, this is more of a PR thing and a paper transaction, because we do know...
Well, it might not be, and we'll get to that in a second. But
the kind of split, I put the split in air quotes from outside influences very, very strongly, because a lot of the teams in the league are still owned by the major companies like Gazprom, who are owned by Russian oligarchs who are tied directly
to the,
Putin government, and they're still going to be able to say, like, hey, do this, do that, do this, do that.
But
it's just they get to sidestep away from the Russian Hockey Federation and be like, hey, we're independent.
Okay, so here's the thing, though, and I'm glad you brought that up, because the oligarchs are probably going to be the ones making decisions now as to where and how they play. But this split then, because the Russian Hockey Federation was pretty insistent on reestablishing a team in Vladivostok, for example, after it shut down its operations for a couple of years. They were pretty insistent on reestablishing the Vitezh Moscow team after it shut down. I mean, there's already Dynamo Moscow, there's already, you know, CSKA Moscow, there's already a pile of teams in Moscow, and yet they wanted a third team in there. This will allow the KHL to start maybe dealing with other, I'm going to say, oligarchs, only because we've already heard of rumors that the United Arab Emirates wants to get in there, that they may have a team they want to put in there. Italy has been approached by the KHL and said, hey, we're kind of interested. Korea now apparently is a country they're looking at. They already have China involved in terms of having the Kunlun Reds.
Well, Korea just also entered into a league with Japan and China.
Well, but except that we're talking, that's South Korea. We're not talking the other Korea, though. because remember, the other Korea had the merged team at the Olympics, where they had to have some of their players, some of the North Korean players with the South Korean players.
Yeah.
Well, they're right on the border.
That is going to be interesting.
So we'll see what happens at that point.
For me, I mean, the Italy one, obviously, there are Russian oligarchs who are living in Italy, and they're going to be able to pay for it, whatever. I don't understand the thought process of putting a team in Italy when we have, I think it's like six teams now that are dropping out of the top division in Italy for financial reasons.
But the question becomes then, if you're an Italian team and you only want to play in the Western Conference of that, because again, Moscow's not that far away from Italy.
No.
You're not that far away from most of the teams in the Western Conference. Now, traveling to the East is going to be a pain in the butt.
It's a pain in the rear for all of the Russian teams as well.
But if they did it like the NHL, where you just play one game in each city every second year, you could solve that problem. And again, I'm not trying to solve the KHL's problems at all. I wish the KHL would just die, but that's just me.
Well, yeah.
At the end of the day, though, there are ways to work around that issue of having it. And that was one of the big concerns with Jokerit, is that they didn't want to travel all the way to the other side of the continent.
Yep.
Because they were going, like, this is maddening in terms of how expensive it is.
Yeah, they thought they were going to jump to the KHL and make a lot more money and be able to charge more, and then suddenly, oh no, this is a lot harder.
And the Russian guys that bought them ended up losing a ton of money on it.
Yep. Exactly. So. Yeah, I still... It seems to me way more like a paper transaction than it actually is.
As of right now, it is, yeah.
Like, it's still going to be heavily influenced by the Russian government. We're probably still going to see CSKA and Moscow load up with, like, 60 guys and just basically put up...
Kuznetsov?
What? Yeah. Like, I remember it was a few years ago, they were, like, prepping for the Olympics, and they had they basically could fill a whole section in the rink with just the guys that were healthy scratched, because they had a team of like 100 people.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they just signed all the best players and started loaning them out to different teams. Like, we're still going to see shenanigans like that. But, like, it's... Yeah, it's a... I'm interested to see what happens coming out of this, because, like, is this them trying to get around the bans that are in place?
Oh, yeah, that's entirely what
it is.
Like, with the IIHF ban in place, the RHF has virtually no power. Like, the Russian Hockey Federation can't really make demands of the KHL, because what are you going to do, not let us play?
Yeah.
whatever. So, I mean, to me, like you said, it's more of a paper transaction right now. It's where that leads to, I think, that KHL owners and KHL fans are sort of looking at and going, there's an opportunity to really do something here. Mm-hmm. What it's going to be, we'll have to see at that point, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll check to see back at some point how the KHL is driving itself into bankruptcy.
Also, an interesting wrinkle to the Kuznetsov thing, because he was originally dinged for cocaine a few years ago, and
correct,
he went to the player assistance program. He received a 4-year ban.
Yes.
In Russia.
Yeah.
And his return to Russia coincides with that ban lifting.
And it's not surprising that that's happening, only because I think that for Kuznetsov, I mean, if you're promised to be the guy in that league, and don't get me wrong, he is one of, you know, he's one of a few NHLers, a few well-known NHLers in that league, but he is going to be marketed like nobody's business over there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's going to be like when Kovalchuk signed there, basically.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Kovalchuk didn't have a great year, but whatever. Kuznetsov is gone. We're never going to hear from him again. Have a nice life. I want to get to something a little closer to home as well. The 2026 Memorial Cup bidding process came and went in July. And it's interesting because there are three teams that ended up getting their names in for the bidding process. We'll start with the first one, who happened mid-June. And that was the Kelowna Rockets got their name in there. Kelowna Rockets were supposed to, they've won two bids. They've only hosted once, though, because the other time it was canceled in 2020 when COVID-19, the pandemic, was happening. So they're looking to host again. The Kelowna bid, though, is interesting because their bid is being backed by GSL Group, which manages Prospera Place, which is where they play.
Yep.
GSL has proposed upgrades to Prospera Place to be able to host the tournament, so we'll see if those upgrades are pushed through in time. GSL President and CEO Graham Lee told Global News Vancouver that, or Global News Kelowna, excuse me, in that the work would take seven months to complete, totally in the ballpark of $18 to $22 million. So that's a pretty significant upgrade.
Whew.
So I don't know what they're planning on doing. There wasn't a lot of details there, but I mean, there's a chance there for Kelowna to get in there. The next team that lined up was the Brandon Wheat Kings.
Nice.
They came out a week after Kelowna and said, you know what, we can do this. Brandon might actually be the right facility for what they're looking for, and I'll sort of hit on why. Brandon's got all sorts of history, though, in the Memorial Cup.
Yep.
They lost the Memorial Cup final in 2010 to the Windsor Spitfires, so they were there in 2010. But they've been involved in six Memorial Cup tournaments in team history, 1949, 79, 95, 96, 2010, and 2016. Brandon obviously has a limited number of people, but they have a surrounding community, obviously, of massive hockey fans. Like,
and
lots of people out in southwestern Manitoba, we know that.
And people you can draw from Winnipeg.
Right. Keystone Center is a partner in the bid, which is where they're going to play.
Yep.
It's undergoing a transformation this summer as the old red seats, the old Winnipeg Jet seats that they had in there, are being replaced by wider black seats. So they're going to have bigger seats, better seats for people to sit in. For the first time ever, air conditioning and a dehumidification plant are being put in.
What?
They didn't have that, which is why they had no ice over the summer. They could not keep it.
Oh.
So that's being installed. Bathrooms are being renovated. Areas for better accessibility are being made. And upgraded security cameras were installed in 22. Now you're going, none of that stuff is really like going to help a team on the ice. No, but it makes it better for fans, which obviously is important when you're hosting something like the Memorial Cup. Everybody's going to show up and do that. The big thing for me, though, is that Brandon, and this is where they might win, Brandon has everything contained under one roof.
Yeah,
they have the hotel, they have the conference areas, they have the practice facility, they have the main rink, and they have any sort of additional space needed for media and for reporters at that point. So
it's a lot easier. I mean, Kelowna, the hotel's like close to the rink.
Near Prospera, yeah.
And it's gonna be pretty nice in Kelowna around the time of the Memorial Cup, but. Yeah, I think just having the total package in Brandon is going to really help.
The last team to get in, And they legitimately got in at the last moment as well. Yeah. The last team to get in was the Lethbridge Hurricanes.
Okay.
Now, the Hurricanes got in. They actually got in on Thursday, July 24th? 5th? 4th. July 20... No, July 25th. So, I mean, that was like last week when we were doing the show. Lethbridge might... I mean, I like Lethbridge, don't get me wrong. I mean, they had the pronghorns there. I don't know if they're going to get in. But this is the second time in the last 5 years the Hurricanes have applied to be a host after missing on the 2020 tournament. They lost to Kelowna. City has never hosted a Memorial Cup tournament before. Mm-hmm. While Lethbridge-based WHL teams appeared just twice at previous Memorial Cup tournaments since 1983.
Yeah.
So not a lot of history there. I didn't know this part. Alberta's only hosted the Memorial Cup on five occasions. I thought Alberta, with all the teams they have out there, would have hosted it a lot more.
Yeah.
Only five times. The last one was Red Deer in 2016.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's Red Deer.
But, again, five times in the history of the Memorial Cup. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Here's why I don't think they're going to get it, though. Hurricanes are... The Hurricanes, if they win the bid... Now, I want you to hear that statement clearly. If they win the bid, the Lethbridge City Council has approved $1.25 million in funds to help them sort of... get all the hosting and all the requirement off the ground. If
it's contingent. The other two, it's like, these things are happening anyways.
Right. Like, we're doing it no matter what happens. Yeah. We just got to get,
you know. That's the difference there.
Right. So Lethbridge is going to propose $1.25 million in funds if they win the bid. Now, again, Lethbridge does have pretty good experience hosting a national tournament. They hosted the U Sports National Men's Hockey Championship a few years ago before the Pronghorns were unceremoniously axed from the University of Lethbridge.
Never going to forgive them for that.
No, I still have anger over that. But at the end of the day, though, Lethbridge is the third team in there. They're probably going to be the first team eliminated, though. The final two teams will come down to a four-person committee who will vote on all the various things. There's the second part of the process, which is a formal application. It's got a video and written stuff and all sorts of... all that's going on right now. Mm-hmm. But legitimately, the final announcement will be made by the CHL in late November. So we'll know in November who is the next host. My money is on Brandon right now. I think they will win, but
I just think Brandon's going to be able to put together a better package for hosting and just with the experience that they have. I think Kelowna's saving grace would be like a bit of a gimme for what they've missed.
Do you know that one of the criteria for hosting the Memorial Cup is you have to have a powerhouse team in that year?
Since when?
That is the requirement. You have to have a team that will have a pile of senior, like a pile of like graduating players in that year in order for you to be a good team.
Okay.
They basically don't want to push over hosting the Memorial Cup. You can roll your eyes at me. Think about how many host teams have won the Memorial Cup, though. Like, they just load up for that Memorial Cup.
That's the point.
That's the whole idea, though.
Like, so you host it, and then you're like, okay, well, we're just going to yard sale all of our draft picks for the next 5 years to build a super team. Well, Kelowna finished 5th in the Western Conference last year.
Right, now we're looking at 2026, though, so this is 2 years away.
Yeah, and then... Brandon finished 6th in the Eastern Conference. What are those teams going to look like 2 years from now?
Well, that's the question, right?
Like, so, Kelowna already is losing TJ Ginla.
Right, but so again, like if we're rolling back here in terms of where we gone, Saginaw won last year. They were the host, right?
Yeah.
2 years ago, 2022, St. John Sea Dogs won. They were the host. 2019, Halifax was the finalist. They lost to Roy Noranda. Regina hosted 2018. They lost in the final. 2017, Windsor hosted and won. 2012, Shawinigan hosted and won. 2011, the St. John Sea Dogs beat Mississauga, who hosted. 2010, Windsor beat Brandon 9-1 in the final when Brandon hosted. The hosts are in the final more often than any of the other teams are. And that's why I think that's one of the requirements is legitimately that if you don't have up and coming players, we don't want you as a host. You're automatically eliminated. Mm-hmm. So teams that are going to be a powerhouse next year in the Memorial Cup, say again, I'm just going to throw out random names. Say the Edmonton Oil Kings are going to be the winners from them. They're not even going to make it a bid option on it because we're not going to have a very good team in 2026.
I'm just looking through the roster. Brandon has quite a few rookies on the roster. Um,
Brandon might be pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think they're going to win. So we'll see what happens on that side. So
3-0. Oh God, I'm just looking at. I'm looking at the date of births for these players, and I'm sad.
I know.
There's a 2008 on Kelowna. No, there's a 2007 on Brandon.
Stop. It hurts already. One last note that before we get out of here, those that enjoyed our chatter a couple weeks ago about the Night Monsters, the Tahoe Night Monsters.
Night Monsters.
Everybody forgets there's another expansion team coming into the ECHL next year.
Yeah, because their name is dumb.
The Bloomington Bison are the other team. Bloomington, Indiana, the other team that have it in. Well, I mean, it's not the greatest, but whatever. They actually have a bunch of stuff that's going on as well. They've hired their first head coach and general manager in Philip Barsky, who was he actually worked a whole bunch of places in Ontario. Yep. One of the places was York University in CIS. He coached the men's hockey team there. Again, Barsky's going to have a bunch of work to do, but they've signed affiliation agreements with the New York Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes, so they could get some decent players.
Especially if Carolina doesn't find an AHL affiliate.
Well, yeah. I mean, Carolina is still trying to weasel their way in there, whatever. Jesse Messier, who was the captain at York, is going to be the assistant coach there as well. And then they hired, as their assistant GM, Dan Larmer, who was a former professional scout with the OHL's Peterborough Petes. So having an assistant GM who's a scout probably gives you a pretty good insight as to who's going to be a decent player if you're looking for a couple players anyway.
Interesting.
Again, Carolina's new AHL affiliate apparently is going to be Chicago. They've apparently agreed to in terms anyway that they're going to be the affiliation.
Chicago was independent for all of 30 seconds.
Bloomington and Chicago are 4 hours apart by car. So that's a pretty
That's
a pretty good setup. Yeah, it's better than Tahoe and Vegas anyway.
Yeah,
I mean that's 5 hours, I guess, but whatever. But at the end of the day, though, Bloomington and Chicago are right there. So Bloomington and Bison are getting set and getting ready to go. They still haven't signed a player yet, so we're waiting on that information. But yep. At least they've got basically a decent management team, decent coaching staff, and it looks like they have some affiliation setups to benefit from if and when they get players from those teams.
And a Bison and a top hat.
Bison and a top hat is their logo. Yeah, yep. We'll see how that goes. And they're using that light blue like everybody else seems to be, and I'm starting to get sick of that color. I appreciate the Winnipeg Ice in initiating that, but...
Well, like, okay. It makes sense for a team in Illinois, though. Actually, it would make more sense for a team in Chicago because the flag of Chicago has that blue on
it.
Isn't Bloomington a... It's not a suburb of Chicago. It's too far away.
No, it's 4 hours away. It's in Indiana. It's a different state.
Oh, yeah. Isn't Bloomington in Illinois?
No, Bloomington in Indiana.
I'm going insane.
That's okay. You're doing all right, though. We got about 2 minutes to go here on the show. Anything you want to say before we go, Jay, before we get out of here? We got a few commercials to play before Skippy's on next with Free Range Radio.
Just everybody enjoy the long weekend. Enjoy Terry Fox Day on Monday if you're in Winnipeg.
Yeah, you know what? I mean,
in Manitoba.
It's been a while since I need a long weekend. I won't get it this weekend because, again, I'm working all weekend at another job that I enjoy doing. If you're going to get out anywhere, go see Gold Eyes all weekend.
Yeah.
As they welcome first place Sioux Falls, a chance to overtake them in the standings as well. We could be talking about the first place Winnipeg Gold Eyes next week if that's the case. But with that, folks, we're going to get out of here for another week. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio. Skippy coming up next here on the station. Glad that you joined us here on the Hockey Show tonight. We'll see you next Thursday, everybody. Have a good one.
Still here? It's over. Go home.
Actually, don't go anywhere. You're listening to 101.5 CJUM FM in Winnipeg.